We have a very special guest with us today on the Think MHK podcast, and special to me anyway, because it's my boss. It's the current chair of the Manhattan Area Chamber of Commerce, Jake Wassenberg. Hey, Jake.
How we doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks.
Good. And so far, so good on the chairmanship.
So far, so good. Yep.
All right. Well, we always try to ask our guests to tell a little bit about themselves. And I know you were on the podcast a couple years ago, but remind people who you are and how you ended up in Manhattan.
Well, I'm originally from Marysville. So Manhattan was kind of our second home. Our family business is Pepsi-Cola of Marysville. And so I'm a fourth generation of my family in the soft drink business. I didn't necessarily, when I was younger, aspire to, go into the family business, but it has worked out pretty well. And Manhattan is the biggest town that we service. So instead of moving me to Marysville when I was just out of college, my dad gave me the opportunity to move to Manhattan. And I've been here since 1997 is when I moved to Manhattan. So.
And you guys moved the operations pretty much of your Pepsi to Manhattan, correct?
Well, we've always had a presence in Manhattan. Okay. We had a building that we closed, I want to say it was in 92, which was definitely the right thing to do at the time. And they serviced everything out of Marysville. We bought a vending company, Bird Music and Amusements, in 1998. And that was right after I had come back from college. And so I had an office there. And so we officed out of that building. And then we built the building that we're in today in 2004. So that's just over there in the industrial park off Levy Drive. But Marysville is still the headquarters. Okay. Anybody in like New York at PepsiCo, that's all they would know is Marysville, because that's mm-hmm. our franchise name. So that's still the home office officially. But a lot of the operations are in Manhattan.
Tell me about growing up in Marysville.
Small town, high school football. It's kind of like every bad country music song you've ever heard, where everybody meets up at the Pizza Hut after the football game. It was kind of actually like that, because we did actually do that. But it was great. I mean, I had a great experience in a small town, a small high school, and we kind of Barb is also my wife's also from Marysville, so. We kind of thought that at some point, maybe that would be what we would try to choose for our kids based on our own personal experiences. But they've been very happy in Manhattan. So we're very fortunate.
Yeah. And you did make one fatal error, went to KU. Right? That's a joke.
Yeah. I always tell people I couldn't get into K-State. So I had to go down the road make do. But I did have a great experience there. And it's actually something that's kind of become a little bit, it's kind of fun because people give me a hard time about it. So it makes me a little bit different than most people, I guess, is that I went to the wrong school. But I did have a great experience there. So.
And you are a K-State guy. I can vouch for it.
I wear a lot of purple. Yeah, lots of purple in the closet. Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. And so your family's been involved for Pepsi, as you said, for four generations. How did that start and how has that grown over the years?
So the story goes, my great-grandfather signed the contract to buy the first three counties of Pepsi franchise territory on December 7th, 1941, which was the day that Pearl Harbor was bombed. So it was a Sunday and they found out about Pearl Harbor later on and basically thought they were ruined at that point because, World War I had been not all that, it wasn't all in that distant past. And so they thought things would be, it would not be advantageous for them to be getting into a new business at that time. But they made it through and that's how we got started.
So if I remember correctly, at one point you had told me you're one of the few family-owned distributors left in Pepsi Corporation, correct?
There's only, it changes. It seems like we lose one or two about every year. I want to say there's maybe 60 franchise operators like us left. Usually it's like, at this point it's multi-generational families and a lot of it is like estate planning issues, succession planning problems, that sort of thing usually. Is what kind of ends. A lot of people opt out at that point when they can't figure out the next line, so to speak.
And generally, Pepsi would prefer to own them all themselves, but they respect the families like yours who have been in the business for a number of years.
And we actually have a great relationship with our PepsiCo contacts. I had two guys that I dealt with for years on the PepsiCo side that recently retired, and I'm still in contact with them post their work career. So we had a really great relationship. They're the type of guys that, but they both happen to be men, but they're the type of people that you could, you know, we talked parenting strategy and all kinds of other things outside of work. So we've had we've been very fortunate to have really high quality people that we've dealt with on the PepsiCo side.
And you have Pepsi, but much to the delight of my wife, you also have Dr. Pepsi. Pepper,
so. We are the Dr. Pepper bottler, as they say in old school terms, but they still call us bottlers. But we are a Dr. Pepper bottler for Riley in Pottawatomie County.
Okay, so let's talk overall about business climate in Manhattan. What do you think makes Manhattan a good place for businesses and entrepreneurs?
So, I think if you're an entrepreneur and you're wanting to start a business that within basically 5 miles of where we are sitting right now, you can find a subject matter expert. And a lot of that, obviously, that's going to be mostly K-State, but there's really not too many businesses that you would want to start that you wouldn't be able to find somebody at the university that would be a subject matter expert. And you think about it, in a town of 50,000 people, I think that's pretty unique. I think like in terms of like the business climate, the fact that we are, you know, we're kind of a government money town, right, with K-State and Fort Riley. But, you know, the highs aren't as high and the lows aren't as low. But I think that, you know, if you're a business owner, being able to predict, know the future a little bit and know that things are going to be fairly steady, which sometimes is viewed as a negative, I don't think that's such a bad thing.
No, I mean, I think at the end of the day, if you can eliminate the highs and the lows, sometimes it makes it easier as a business person to plan. I think the challenge we've had, and you've talked about before, and we're going to talk about, I think, in a minute with some of your goals is we probably just need to grow a little, even, yeah. You know, we've been fairly stagnant. And I know that creates long-term challenges for businesses in terms of sales and also in terms of tax liability, but we'll get into that in just a minute. So you and I have gotten to know each other through work, but also I probably see you more because of, we have kids the same age and I see in those kind of environments as well. And so I know you're very connected with your family and you do a lot of kids things. So what do you think it is about Manhattan that makes it a great place to raise a family?
It's an overgrown small town. It's a small town with a Target, as somebody put it to me the other day, which I thought was pretty funny. But it's an overgrown small town. And, you know, that's kind of that's how I grew up. And that's what I know. And as far as like, you know, raising your kids in a town the size of Manhattan, I mean, there's a lot of opportunities. There's a lot of we avoid some of the negatives of the bigger communities, but there's a lot of entertainment options, and the school district has been great. I mean, I've got two kids at 383 that are loving it, and one kid still at the Catholic school, so we're having a great experience.
And you mentioned your wife Barb, and you have three kids.
Three kids. Grayson's 15, Lydia's 13, and Elliot she's 9.
On a different subject, did you ever get to see Grayson catch a touchdown pass this year? That was kind of a running joke.
Yeah, I did. It turns out most of the good games that he had playing JV, I happened to be traveling those games, and so I wasn't able to see them in person. But I did see the varsity touchdown.
Oh, there you go.
The playoff game there when we were we had a big lead, and he was in kind of late in the game. But yeah, that was fun. I mean, I was pleasantly surprised how the season went for him, and he's obviously taken an interest in football, yeah. Which makes me
happy. He took a huge step. We hadn't talked about that, but he had a great year. It was kind of a running joke that eventually he was not going to let you come to any games because all of his good games happened while you were gone.
Yeah, it made me dad happy for sure to see him smiling a little bit more.
So let's talk a little bit about your chamber experience. So about 4 years ago, Matt Crocker and I sat down with you and asked you to serve on the executive committee, which we told you entailed 5-year commitment, including a term as chair. So what made you decide to accept the invitation to be on the exec committee at that point?
Well, yeah, I get this strange text message from Matt that says, you know, hey, can you join me for after work beers at 4:30 on November 7th? Or, you know, some very formal. And so I was like, this is not how text each other. And so I think I responded, would you please return this stolen phone to Matt Crocker? I joined Matt, and it was Laurie, and then I think you jumped in there later. You were coming in from a meeting or something. I can't recall exactly, but I don't foresee my name ever being on a ballot. But when you look at some of the things that the chamber does, I think that we can affect some of those outcomes as volunteers. When I went through Leadership Kansas in 2007, I had one of my classmates was a legislator, and he was having a conversation, kind of a heated conversation, with one of my other classmates about lobbyists and the relationship of lobbyists with the elected folks. And his response was that we can't be subject matter experts on everything, and we need folks in the private sector to take a role and help move things along in the right direction, or the direction that they would like to see. So I think that's something that the chamber does pretty well.
One of the things that you were able to do that I appreciated early on, and it's always hard to explain exactly what the chamber does and why it benefits businesses of all sizes and actually the community overall, but we're a business organization first. And so one of the things that we try to differentiate is, regardless if you're a solo entrepreneur or have hundreds of employees, there's something that we do that will benefit you. And it primarily centers around our efforts to grow the community. And we always talk about grow in terms of population, grow in terms of jobs, and the people in those jobs make more money. But I always enjoy the fact, we were riding around one day and you said, yeah, if we do what we're supposed to do, I'm going to sell more Pepsi. That's simplest terms, that's really, you know, insert the name of your business here. That's, if we're doing our job, then you're going to be able to sell more, you're going to be able to find more workers, you're going to be more productive as a business, and hopefully that makes the community more economically viable.
I don't know if I'd say this is something I feel like I'm particularly good at, but taking like a lot of information and trying to summarize it into everyman's terms, that's kind of how I like to try to take these things and summarize them. But yeah, I mean, if we do our job, the old cliche that a rising tide lifts all boats. So I imagine that, yeah, I should sell more Pepsi, and Ben's going to sell more shoes. And, you know, you go down the list, every single person in that room is going to see a benefit.
So what surprised you about your experience, I guess, the last 3 years on the exec committee?
So I would say that even one thing I don't know, and this is maybe just a little bit of a character flaw, but it's sometimes when you disagree with people, you have a tendency to think that maybe they don't have the same information that you do, or their life experience is not the same as yours, and that they're just not quite as informed as you are. And then after talking to them and you're having a conversation where you disagree and you think to yourself, we're walking away from this conversation and one of us is wrong, it actually might be me. So you kind of have to learn to appreciate those differences. Those people, like in the terms of like some of the elected folks that we get to deal with, and it's not all the time, but they are genuinely doing the best they can, I think, and they're doing it for the right reasons. I mean, it takes some guts to stick your neck out and put your name on a ballot, and I think they are doing the best they can and trying to genuinely represent their constituents. So that doesn't always mean that we'll agree with that, but that's just kind of the way it is sometimes. But hopefully we're able to have, you know, those conversations and get everybody kind of on board with some of the initiatives that we want to do in particular in terms of housing.
That's an interesting point, because I think partisan politics has turned dialogue and discussion into somebody's right and somebody's wrong. And most of the time, at least in things that we're dealing with, it's really not a right or wrong answer. It's just, you have to make a choice. And it's always to your benefit if you can sit down and understand why that individual is making that choice, as opposed to just saying they're wrong.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, some of our priorities this year, it's, you know, meet the new boss, same as the old boss. It's like the list is the same. It's not necessarily always the same. It's just that some of these problems they're complicated. They're big and complicated, and they're not easy to solve. And there are a lot of stakeholders. And, you know, it takes a while to get everybody lined up.
Yeah. So you talked about that a little bit. What are some of your goals? And I know when you say your goals, we've had a lot of planning as an organization. And so these are goals of the organization. But what are some things that you're really focused on for 2024?
Well, the three big priorities are childcare, housing, workforce housing, and a business park. So I do think that, and there's a little bit of frustration, and I've heard it just very recently that the list doesn't seem to change much. And I understand that. But like I said, these are big, fairly complicated problems, and they're not just problems just in our community. They're, you know, a lot of places are struggling with childcare. A lot of places are struggling with housing. I mean, it's, it's not easy to just, you know, check the box and move on. So it takes some time. The list kind of evolves versus just appearing out of thin air. So we'll have to work through those things. But I do think in 2024, we should, fingers crossed, be able to see some progress with housing in terms of RHID, which the R used to stand for rural. I believe it's so Rural Housing Incentive District. And now I believe the R stands for Reinvestment Housing Incentive District, which is a lot of words. But basically, it's, you know, the property taxes are frozen, and the incremental taxes that a developer or somebody would come in and make improvement, those incremental taxes that are generated over time go to pay down the infrastructure debt. And in theory, you know, kind of erase the specials that are somewhat unique to how Manhattan does things. But we certainly have an affordable housing issue here, and I don't think anybody really would debate that too much. So that's just one tool, and I think we will see a local developer come forward with that in 2024. And so we'll have to get our stakeholders, city, county, and the school district on board to see if we can move forward with that.
I think real quick before you get into your other ones, and I think one of the challenges we have in this space, there's a couple of things. Number one, affordable housing is difficult to construct. I mean, the way the prices have gone up and interest rates and labor costs. So one of the things that we have seen that's happened since interest rates went up is people aren't as likely to move up as they used to be. And so we're getting a glut of, I don't know if glut is the right term, but we're just getting a really stagnant housing market. And what happens historically is somebody gets a better job, gets a raise or second income or whatever, and they can afford to move up in a house. And then that opens up a lower house for somebody to move into. So if no one's moving up, there's nothing being created at the bottom. So sometimes it's also real important to understand creating affordable housing also means creating housing of all kinds. And so I think that's really important. The other thing that is a challenge, and I understand it to some degree, this is one of those where it's not right or wrong, but you have to understand the dynamics, is you hear people talk about, well, that's unfair to the people who built 5 years ago. If you've compared costs of construction and interest rates today compared to 5 years ago, there's a lot of unfairness just in that difference. And I think you're ultimately much better off if you built your house 5 years ago than even if you get some incentives to build it today than you would be today. And so I think understanding the market and the dynamics and trying to attract people who are willing to invest their own capital to build spec housing, we just have to be more aggressive in a way that we've not had to do that, I think, as a community before. So it's a tough dialogue, and I appreciate you being willing to lead that effort for us.
Yeah, and I mean, like I said, it seems like housing, I mean, there's going to be people listening to this that are say, how many times are we going to talk about housing this and housing that? Well, at least now we have we have one tool now with this RHID. Now that Manhattan is eligible, as I understand it, this is what going to be the third year. We're even eligible to do it in our community. So, I mean, there is a tool that we have now that we can use to, you know, to make a difference. So hopefully, yeah, and the market has not solved it. And I know there's a lot of people that are reluctant to put their thumb on the scale when it comes to this sort of thing. And I totally get that. But if you think of like the Kansas legislature, I think it's fair to say is a fairly conservative body. And the fact that they actually expanded RHID to make communities like Manhattan eligible, I mean, that tells you something right there. So I think it's something that we got to look at.
Well, we have to retain people. We need more taxpayers as a state, right?
Absolutely.
We need more taxpayers as a community. The other tool that became available in 23 is the 10% from the economic development sales tax, which is going to be about $1 million a year that the city will have to invest in workforce housing. So there's a couple of new things that I think will help through this process.
I don't think we can continue just to do what we've done and assume that it'll solve itself. I think we've got to be a little bit more forward thinking and say, hey, we're going to try something. Let's break a few eggs and see how it goes.
I agree. So you had two others.
So the business park, that's another one that I think we'll see some movement on that in 2024. Fingers crossed. Now that goes back. Boy, I want to say, was that Mark Bochamp?
That's three years ago,
and that was his big deal, and he was exactly right, and it's still the right thing. I mean, it's just funny to me that you have communities that are out recruiting employers to come to their area because they have all these, they have these opportunities, they have this land for them, they have areas for them to develop. And then you've got Manhattan where you have people saying, hey, you don't have to recruit us. We'd like to be there and we can't put them anywhere. We have nowhere for them to go. So hopefully that's something that we see happening in 2024. I feel pretty optimistic about that one, actually. And I think our stakeholders are on board with that one. At least I hope so. And then the last one is childcare. And so the childcare accelerator, I am not a subject matter expert on that one. I can tell you that it seems to me, this is my read of it, is that the goalposts tend to move a lot when you're talking about money coming in from the state or the feds or whatever entity has got the power of the purse strings. The definitions change. So I know that group has been very flexible in trying to engineer their way to a solution there for some grant money. And hopefully that comes to, we get a little bit more, we get some more information on that here in the next few weeks.
Yeah. And at the time of recording this, they're still working on their financing strategy that we hope by the time this comes out, they will have put that plan together and receive their funding.
Hopefully old news by then. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it won't be old news, but hopefully it'll be further down the line. And I think one of the things that is extremely valuable in our efforts to get the Child Care Accelerator done is the partnership with the Community Foundation and others. And the Community Foundation has taken the lead on this. And Vern Hendricks has said, this is going to happen. We are going to make this happen. And so I'm very comfortable that if it's not already, the financing on that's not already finalized, it will be shortly. So, but yeah, those are three big issues.
Yeah. And Vern gets a shout out here because Vern has been great. I mean, it seems like if there's a meeting with 10 people in it, Vern needs to be one of the 10. He's got his hands in all kinds of stuff and he's doing a fantastic job in my opinion. So give Vern a little bit of love there.
I agree 100%. So anything else that you're looking for in 24 or just kind of focusing on the three big, I mean, obviously we have a lot going on, but.
And there's no stump speech, but I think one of the things that we have to wrap our arms around and has to be something that's top of mind is that as a community, we've got to grow. We have to grow. The city of Manhattan has to grow. You know, I got a text the other day from my neighbor about property tax. You know, he's asking me about property taxes. And I said, you know, instead of talking about your property taxes, why don't you talk to your elected people about what is their strategy to grow the tax base? Instead of complaining about the taxes, tell them we need to grow the tax base because ultimately, if everything is going to get just a little bit more expensive every year and the same people, the same number of people are paying for it, everybody's going to have to pay more. That's just, I mean, I went to KU. I can even do that math. It's that easy. So, you know.
Or like, cut services, right?
Yeah, you're going to have to cut services. And, you know, we had the little blow up with the Parks and Rec situation. And, you know, that was probably a good thing. I mean, I'm sure Ron and Jason Hildreth would say not, but it was a wake up call to everybody to kind of like say, hey, you know, maybe this is a thing that we should try to solve by growing the tax base. They don't want to cut flag football. They don't want to cut, you know, Parks and Rec stuff, some of that more visible stuff that people really have a connection to. But you have to grow the tax base. Everything's going to get a little bit more expensive. And without more people, you're going to pay more. That's the end. So grow it.
Well, that's you're speaking my language at this point. So that's what we've been talking about for nearly 4 years. So Jake, thank you for participating in this, but we are now moving on to, I think you did this the first time, but we've changed the questions up. We call it the infamous rapid fire section. So are you ready to move forward?
Yeah, I don't think I did this the last time, but I'll give it a go.
Okay.
We'll see how it goes.
10 questions. Answer them as quick as you can.
Okay.
So number one, do you have any hidden talents?
I'm weirdly good at music trivia.
Interesting. Okay. All right. Any particular genre or just in general?
No, just in general. Some of the new stuff I struggle with, but yeah.
A buddy of mine and I used to play the radio game and play where you click the seek and you have to whoever names the artist first.
My kids like to do that in the car. They'll just flip the radio dial over and over and over and go to a new song and I'll try to guess it while they're like, you know, trying not to show the display so I can't cheat.
I know. Lots of fun. What movie have you seen the most times?
So at one time it was definitely Finding Nemo because of kids.
I have seen that many times as well.
Yeah. So, like, generally between, like, you know, the Friday after Thanksgiving and maybe, like, the second week of January, we have Elf and or Christmas Vacation, like on a loop at our house as like background noise. And so I'd have to say Christmas Vacation is probably the one I've seen the most.
That's the same way at our house too. Those, in fact, it's those two movies. If you could only watch one movie or television show for the rest of your life, what would it be?
And I do not watch much TV. I would say it's something that's still, I think, still funny. And my kids actually think it's funny. Is Seinfeld. I would probably say Seinfeld.
I gotcha. Describe your perfect day.
Something with my wife and kids where we are preoccupied enough that nobody looks at their phone.
That would be a good day. So now you mentioned earlier that this probably, the answer to this next question probably isn't working for Pepsi, but what job did you want as a kid?
I wanted to be a pilot.
A pilot?
Yeah.
For Pepsi or just in
general? No, in general.
Just in general.
Yeah. I wish I had that problem of having to be a pilot for Pepsi. Yeah. That would be great. But I always have been fascinated with aircraft. Still kind of an airplane nerd. So.
What's the coolest place you've traveled? And I know you've traveled a lot.
Yeah, we've been very lucky. My folks take us on our trips frequently. And so we've had the opportunity to see a lot of cool places. Not this past summer, but summer of 22, my mom and dad celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary, and they took us to the Galapagos Islands. And so I would say that that is definitely by far and away the coolest place I've ever been.
That's a bucket list trip for sure.
Yeah.
What is one question you wish people would ask you less?
I get asked in one form or another, not quite every day, but almost every day I get asked if I would like to have a Coca-Cola. Can I get you a Coke? Can I get this? I mean, almost every day.
That's
have to act like it's the first time you ever heard it, because they're just trying to be nice, right? But it's like, oh man, if we could just ban that question for life.
You know what it is for chamber people? Weather. We get asked, you know, is this chamber weather? Ha ha. You know, you walk out like it's raining, whatever. Yeah.
So. And like Jake from State Farm, I get that a lot too. It used to be Jake the Snake or something like that. Now it's Jake from State Farm. It's Jake with Pepsi. Oh, not Jake from State Farm. Oh, first time I heard that one.
Got it. Yeah. Especially if it's a customer, right?
Yeah. Right.
How do you deal with work stress?
I go out to the warehouse and I build pallets with the fellas, jump on a forklift. I go do some sort of physical exercise.
That probably would take care of it. First and favorite concert?
So the first one I can ever remember at the time was a really big deal. It was Michael Jackson, the Thriller. I think it was the Victory Tour. It was like 1984. I was like 9. Right,
that'd be 84.
It was like a $30 ticket. And everybody was like, good Lord, nobody will pay $30 for a ticket. But
that's nosebleeds today.
You can't even get in. Yeah. Well, that's like one beer too. Yeah. So it's got a little bit more
expensive. Was that your favorite too or just first?
That was my first. The latest one, I went to Morgan Wallen and I went up in Lincoln. It was earlier this fall, so a couple months ago.
So last question, what advice would you give the 19-year-old you?
My sister's oldest is a freshman at K-State. So my nephew, I told him when he got here, I said, as long as it's legal, say yes to everything. Like, you want to sign up for this? You want to sign up for that? You want to go here? You know, join this club? Say yes, like jump in. He probably didn't need that advice because my sister's given him great advice, but he has done that. And one of the things that I've started doing myself, and I told him this, in kind of a different way, but I try to show gratitude to people kind of unexpectedly, just a compliment or something, positive, just to kind of put a smile on their face. And I find that when I do that and I get the reaction that I typically do, that it makes them happy, that it actually makes me happy. So it's kind of a stress reliever in a weird way.
And I've seen that in action. You actually did that to our producer, Dave Lewis, before we got on the air today.
I did. I was buttering him up a little bit just in case we need some touch-ups. There you go.
Jake, thanks for being on the ThinkMHK podcast. Thanks for agreeing to be in a leadership role. And it's a huge commitment, and it's not one that we take lightly, and we appreciate you doing that. And good luck on your term as the chair.
Thank you very much.